carries in, scores! Patrick Laine snaps it. What a goal by Laine.
Gonna throw this one in the trash and move on. That's not obviously the way you want to start.
Shooting, it's off of Hellebuck. Rebound, side of the net. Stop by Hellebuck. Key saves for Connor Hellebuck.
Johnson scores. Sidney Crosby.
As long as we stick together as a team, we'll be all right.
Stand by highlight. Stand by host. You big boy.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Smile, everyone.
With Drew Mendel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manouk.
And cue the little criminal.
On your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca or via the iHeartRadio app, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We have 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning, a Remembrance Day, and of course, we all will pause in studio at 11 a.m. to pay tribute to all those who fought for our freedom and continue to serve this great country of ours. So while it is Remembrance Day, we will, of course, keep the solemnness of the day first and foremost, front and center, as we talk about your Winnipeg Jets and the world of hockey for the next 3 hours. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is illegalcurve.com. You can also reach us in studio via text message. Send your texts to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. If I like what I see, I might read it on air. If I don't like what I see, probably won't read it on air.
I don't like what I see right now, Drew. I'll tell you that much.
Good morning to you, handsome there. Ezzy Ginsberg, Dave Manouk join me in studio. Nice to see you on this Saturday morning. How you feeling there, Ezzy?
I'm feeling good. We just finished the post-game show about 8 hours ago, but yeah. I'm doing pretty well. We've got a coffee here. We've all got a coffee here in studio and ready to go, ready to break down last night's game.
Yeah, well, that certainly wasn't much to break down from a positive sense of the word. That was a Winnipeg Jets team, Dave, that looked eerily familiar to a Winnipeg Jets team, well, maybe the first couple games this year and really certainly for the years before that. That was a game they were just flat as can be for the 60 minutes last night.
I think it's one of those situations when you say what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, and this Jets team better hope that their effort last night stays in Vegas and they have a much better game today in Arizona. It was clear that, you know, Connor Hellebuck wasn't playing his tip-top game, and when Connor Hellebuck isn't playing his tip-top game, unfortunately, sometimes the ugly warts get exposed on this team, and they did get exposed. And, you know, sure, you can say that the team, you know, was coming off of a longish break at and they had a little bit of rust, which would account for the first period. But you would think that certainly by the second period and the third that this team would be ready to go and bounce back. You know, they're riding the high of having achieved points in 11 of 12 games and, you know, maybe a little full on their success. But, you know, certainly going into that game against Vegas, knowing that they're, I think they were 7-1 at that point or 6-1 in the at home, that this is a very good team. It's a good team in general, and it's a very good home team. So you knew that you couldn't take these guys lightly. And clearly, you know, the Jets, I think that was the first time in six games they hadn't scored the first goal, so they were chasing it. And it was pretty evident that just from the outset, this team wasn't going to play an A game. And the truth is, if this team isn't going to play an A game, and that includes Connor Hellebuck, then you're in trouble.
And Dave, you have to give the Vegas Golden Knights all of the credit in the world, right? They had a very disappointing six-game road trip. They went 1-4-1 on that road trip. And, you know, they were a desperate team. They wanted to get back in the win column in front of their home fans. And, you know, they played a really good game. And, yeah, I agree. You know, that especially the first goal Lucas Abiza scores, it's a nice shot that goes glove side on Connor Hellebuck. But, you know, he would like to have that one back. And, you know, David Perron's goal as well. You know, Connor Hellebuck, you know, it goes under his arm. It's a tough goal to let in. And so the Jets are down 2-0 on the road, right? And, you know, at times it looked like the Jets were struggling just to put two passes together. And, you know, when Patrick Laine scored that power play goal shortly after, I think it was about a minute and a half after William Karlsson scored in the early second period, it looked like the Jets, you know, were going to tie the game up there. But You know, that James Neal goal was an absolute killer. You know, Dmitry Kulikov, unfortunately, just puts it right on James Neal's stick. And I thought that the Jets just weren't sharp in every zone. Not only their own zone, but I think through the neutral zone at times. You know, there was a lot of hot potato hockey happening, right? So, overall, it wasn't the sharpest game for the Jets. But as Dave mentioned, you know, entering the game, they had got points in eight straight games. So they have an opportunity tonight against Arizona to make amends.
Yeah, and we'll, of course, talk about the Jets and the Coyotes throughout the show this morning. But certainly last night, I thought they just looked, and, you know, some rest is understandable when you have the 3 days off, and you see teams go through that a lot where, you know, you have multiple days off and it takes them 5-7 minutes in order to get back into the game.
Yeah, and but, you know what, Drew? Sorry to cut you off. And I thought, you know, the first 3 to 5 minutes were sluggish. But for the most part, I thought the Jets were pretty good in that first period. And sure, they were down 2-1, but, you know, you saw, you know, some good opportunities in front of Max Lagesse, and give him a lot of credit. I mean, we know that this is their fourth string goaltender, but he made some big saves, made a big save on Mark Scheifele late in the game, made a big save on Patrick Laine off of that wrist shot in the first period. So, I mean, he was sharp all night. And, you know, for all of this talk about the Jets not generating enough shots, that wasn't the problem, Dave. It was that they weren't finishing.
Yeah, no, and you're right, as that save he made on Scheifele could have tied the game. And instead he gets over and he makes a save. And so he was certainly terrific. And the Golden Knights were flying. I mean, let's just call it what it was. They were all over the Jets. They were very fast. Clearly that second period was the period. You know, the Jets are lucky to kind of get in there. They had the late power play opportunities in the first period that kind of gave them a little bit of momentum, because at that point, I think early on, they were being outshot, I think, about 5 or 6 to 2, and it was pretty sluggish. And then all of a sudden, because of the courtesy of the power play, they ended up with about, I think the shot total after the first period was like 11-6.
11-7.
11-7. And yeah. Then all
in the,
of the,
in the Jets' favor.
Yeah, yeah, for the Jets. And then the second period, it was a tale of two cities, because then suddenly it was 15-5,
yeah.
If I recall, and it was all Vegas. They controlled the puck for almost the majority of that second period. And again, you know, the Jets just didn't have that next level to hit to be able to kind of compete with a team like Vegas, who was skating, and they were just all over them. And it had pangs of that Montreal game where you thought that the Jets were going to come out really strong, and they just didn't look like they had it. So they'll have a lot to prove tonight, because that just wasn't representative in its totality of this Jets team.
I agree, Dave. I thought that there were a lot of similarities, and, you know, not only the Patrick Laine goal on the power play last night, because Patrick Laine, as you guys remember, scored against Montreal, but it was one of those kind of back-and-forth shootout type of games, right? And that's not really the type of game the Jets want to play. And if you look at Monday night's game against the Dallas Stars, I mean, that's the blueprint for the type of game the Jets want to play, right? They want to get out to the early lead, and they want to spend the majority of that game protecting the lead. They want to protect the lead for most games. And, you know, this is one of those games, as Dave mentioned, not only do they go down 2-0 early in the first period, but the goals that were scored really quickly in the second period, I mean, it's tough for any NHL team to come back down 2 goals in a third period. Any team in the NHL can protect that lead. And sure, the Jets mounted a comeback. They had their shots. They had their scoring chances. You thought they were maybe going to get within 1 goal when they had those power play opportunities in the third period. But, you know, give Vegas a lot of credit. As we mentioned, you know, they wanted to get a win in front of their home crowd. Say whatever you want about this Golden Knights team, guys. This is an exciting team to watch, and they're skilled, and they're fast.
The Golden Knights, this isn't like the Jets outplayed the Golden Knights by any stretch of the imagination. The Golden Knights were the better of the two teams last night.
They were opportunistic.
Yeah, and I thought they were faster than the Jets. I mean, I thought the Jets looked sluggish for the most part in the game. They couldn't complete any passes. I mean, you look at their breakouts from their own zone, and nothing was crisp whatsoever. So, you know, the Jets didn't deserve... They didn't deserve anything other than the result they got, because the Golden Knights were the better of the two teams. The Jets were sloppy. They were sluggish. Their defensive positioning was not where it needed to be. You know, you leave guys all alone. Was it the William Karlsson goal? He's just left all alone at the side of the net. Everybody misses him. You know, everybody on the Jets, their best players were not their best players. There was nobody really that stood out from the Jets' perspective as having a quality game last night.
And Dave, you know, you read Ty Dello in The Athletic talking about, you know, the Jets' shooting percentages and the shot differential and all that.
Mm-hmm. Did you read the article?
Yeah, I did. And you go, and it was a great article. And you go back to that second period, and, you know, you could find many turning points in the game, right? We always talk about that on this show, that usually there isn't one turning point in the game. You could say it was the William Karlsson goal early in the second period. Mm-hmm. I would argue it was the James Neal goal that put them back up by 2 goals, but
sure.
if Mark Scheifele scores that goal in the second period and Lagesse doesn't make an incredible save, then that's a tie game, and you know there's a different maybe outlook to that game. So, you know, really, you could say that the puck luck wasn't there for the Jets, the crispness wasn't there. You know, it just wasn't the Jets' night.
Yeah, they were not the better of the two teams by any stretch. You know, about that article, I found it to be really interesting, and a lot of the analytics articles I admittedly can't get through all of them. I sort of zone out a little bit.
Yeah, you take a nap halfway through.
Taking a little bit of a nap, but I appreciate that somebody's, you know, putting the work together and everything else. I read through that one entirely, and I thought it was really interesting because this is a Jets team that is at the bottom of the league when it comes to Corsi, and, you know, and maybe Corsi isn't the only stat you're looking at. Maybe you're looking at, you know, chances and opportunities and high-risk chances, and, you know, are you keeping your shot suppression to the outside, whatever it might be. But that Tyler Dello article in The Athletic, and I'll send a link out on it, and of course it's subscription only. So
it's in the morning papers.
It's in the morning papers on illegalcurve.com, so you can go check it out. It really, I think, for a Jets fan who's flying high after the, you know, after this point streak, should really give them some pause, because there's a lot of, I think, red flags raised in that article going forward.
Well, we talked about it on the pregame show with Ken Wiebe of the Winnipeg Sun. I mean, it still is a relatively small sample size.
Yeah,
right? It's
admittedly
only been 15 games. So for me, I'd rather see these numbers 30 to 40 games into the season. And sure, there has to be some concern, Dave, when you're talking about the Jets' possession. But I think you have to look at who they've played, and you have to look at, you can't just, I think, look at this in a vacuum, right? You have to look at it, I think, on a game-by-game, almost, you know, like a handful of game basis, right? Because when you look at, you know, the Jets and their possession numbers later in games, well, they're hanging on to leads.
Yeah.
So typically when you're hanging on to a lead, you aren't going to generate as many shots. But, I mean, the reality is right now Connor Hellebuck is masking some of the Jets' deficiencies. There's no doubt. I mean, the Jets do have to start generating more offense from those bottom lines. A perfect example was last night. I mean, Kyle Connor, Mark Scheifele, and Blake Wheeler did not have their best game. And they would admit that.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is you can't necessarily depend on even one of the best lines in the league scoring every night. Blake Wheeler entered last night's game having scored 13 points in five games. I mean, he can't do it every night.
It's not sustainable. Well, and you know, you mentioned that, and we're going to talk about this a little bit later on in this first hour, about the, you know, the lines and which line is driving, and it's clearly the Scheifele and Wheeler combination are driving the offense right now. But I don't think people know or have recognized or spoken about just how poor 5-on-5 that Ehlers line, a little line, has been in terms of actual performance, in terms of actually putting points on the board.
Well, not last night. Last night they were the Jets' best line.
Right, because Scheifele and Wheeler and Connor were really bad. But it's not translating. I mean, Laine, you know, he's got four goals in the last four games, and they're all in the power play. So, the success of the power play, which isn't something you usually talk about here in Winnipeg, but
They're top five in the league now.
Right now they are, because it's been absolutely flying. The power play is really masking a lot of the problems. 5-on-5, this team is really struggling. And, I mean, the majority of the games are played on 5-on-5. So if you're going to be good at something, it should be good at 5-on-5, and you can maybe be a little bit less good, not great English there, but a little bit, you know, poor performance in your power play. The Jets are the reverse of that, and that's usually not going to translate to long-term success.
Yeah, but having said all that, guys, I mean, even if you're outshot pretty badly, like even if you're outshot by 7 to 10 shots and you win the game, that's what coaches really care about. And even though the Jets have been outshot the majority of this season, you know, they're off to a great start. And, you know, if the goaltending does come down to earth a little bit, then it becomes a problem. But if Connor Hellebuck continues to maintain a .930 save percentage, we saw that a couple years back, 3 years back with the Colorado Avalanche and Semyon Varlamov.
Sure.
We saw that with the Montreal Canadiens and Carey Price.
Yeah.
I mean, if you do have elite-level goaltending, you don't have to be the best possession team.
You're absolutely right. And then the question is, of course, becomes one of can they keep it up, and I mean, hard to believe that he can. But
and that's where the bigger sample size comes in.
Sure.
The other thing also to factor in is it'll be interesting to see what this team looks like with Matthew Perreault. When you actually have a third line that you're, third line that can actually generate and score. And you know, if you've got Lowry, Perreault, and throw in player X, Joel Armia, if you will.
And Dave, Lowry was great last night.
Yeah, I actually thought Lowry
and
was
And it wasn't
probably
just the goal. I mean, beautiful tip on the Jets' first goal off of the Dmitry Kulikov shot.
Yeah.
But he was good all night. He was, you know, using his physicality, and, you know, he was trying to generate offense out there. You know, didn't maybe generate enough offense as the game went on, but I thought Lowry was really good in his second game back.
Yeah, I mean, of all the Jets forwards, which there wasn't a lot to talk about, he was one of the better forwards for the Jets last night.
Yeah, of course. And, you know, look, he scored, what, 39 seconds after they were still announcing the Vegas goal. So that really was kind of a lifeline for the Jets to give them that opportunity to kind of get back into the game and feel good about themselves. And I thought Lowry played, probably was the forward that stood out the most for me in terms of for the Jets. But again, like I said, it'll be interesting to see what Matthew Perreault, because, you know, you can't discount the impact he can have on this team. So I think if you throw Matthew Perreault into this lineup and they're still kind of having those numbers we're talking about, because this team is just too talented. And I agree with you, Drew, and we'll talk about it later about the second line and how they just don't seem to have a chemistry right now. But, you know, again, like I said, when you have your top three lines kind of with the ability to score and control the puck the way these guys should, you know, then it's a different story. And if you're not able to do it at that point, then it's a different story. Now, we know Matthew Perreault is not playing tonight. He may play on Tuesday against the Coyotes here in Winnipeg. He obviously isn't going to be 100% because he hasn't played in quite some time. But again, like I said, it'll be interesting to see going forward. I think, are the Flyers in town on Thursday?
Flyers on Thursday.
Yeah, so I mean, I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with Matthew Perreault kind of as he kind of gets back in. And then we'll see what happens with this Jets team kind of thing.
When we come back, we look ahead to tonight's game in Arizona, the Jets and the Coyotes, the second half of the back-to-back. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Milano, now he'll fire it. Save Mason Calvert, bangs away at it. Puck is off the peg on the near side. Matt Calvert, who goes to the net as good as anyone, trying to slam that one past Mason.
Steve Nason played the third period last night for the Jets. He's going to get the start in goal tonight as the Jets travel to Arizona, to Glendale, where they will play in front of, I don't know, 1,000 Coyotes fans, 2,000 Jets fans, and 13,000 empty seats. Something like that.
True. Already making comments about attendance.
Well, I mean, I don't think they're unreasonable comments. Whatever it is, the Jets and the Coyotes tonight in Glendale, Arizona. Game you, of course, can hear live on TSN 1290. This segment of the show, it's brought to you by Linden Market Dental Center, our good friend, Dr. Les Rikus. He's the official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information and to make your teeth ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. So the Jets and the Coyotes tonight, gentlemen. The Coyotes, of course, the worst team in the NHL statistically thus far. 2-13-3. But to their credit, they have been playing better hockey as of late since Antti Raanta returned from injury. He was, of course, is their starting goaltender. He was injured early in the year and then missed a whole big chunk of hockey. Since his return, 1-2-1. Record is average, but a .923 save percentage and a 2.70 goals against average. So while the Coyotes' record is definitely poor, they have been playing better hockey lately than they had at the start of the year, Ezzy.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And it's really been the Clayton Keller show in Arizona. He's the obvious front runner for the Calder Trophy right now. But let's be honest, guys, we knew that the Arizona Coyotes were not going to be a good team this year. I think everyone expected them to be in the Western Conference basement. I don't think we expected it to be this bad, though, right? And players like Max Domi and Anthony Duclair have really struggled early on. Max Domi has only got one goal, and I think Duclair's got three. But those were the two players that really led the offense a couple years back in their rookie year. And, you know, you look at this team, and on paper, you think it should be better than it was last year. But the fact is, they're just still a young team. This is a rebuilding team. And, you know, you mentioned Antti Raanta. Louis Domingue was in net for a little bit, and they actually had to bring in Scott Wedgwood from the New Jersey Devils to be their goalie when they had a couple of goalies down. So, I mean, it's been a big mess there in Arizona. Rick Tocchet has not had a good start to his head coaching tenure there. And, you know, with two games coming up back-to-back, and you're going to hear this a lot, you know, that the Jets can't take the Coyotes lightly. But the reality is, Dave, if the Jets play anywhere close to the way they played in the previous five games before the game against the Golden Knights, they should win both of these games.
Yeah, and what's worth noting, as Drew said, is that, you know, you have Raanta back in net, and the Coyotes have played some stiff competition and done all right. Like, they went to overtime against Washington. Mm-hmm. Then they played a back-to-back loss, 3-1 to Pittsburgh, and then took St. Louis Blues, number one team in the Western Conference, to a shootout.
Yeah.
So they've definitely played better. They've got, you know, a more solid goalie, which is, of course, what you need when you have, you know, a younger team that there are going to be mistakes. You need someone who's going to be solid back there who can kind of bail your team out to offset some of those errors that your young guys are making. But clearly this Jets team needs to be all over Arizona. And, you know, as we well know, because it's a back-to-back, the Jets are going to have probably some pretty good jump to start that first period, but may not have that be able to continue throughout the latter stages of the game. So what you need to do as a Winnipeg-based team, especially knowing I believe tomorrow is a day off for them, that they have to be all over Arizona. They have to get the first goal psychologically, I think, for themselves. Steve Mason looked good last night when he came in for the final period, made a couple nice saves. And
really nice save on Marchessault.
Yeah, really nice save, exactly. On the two. It was basically, first of all, I don't know where the Jets defense was because it was a 2-on-0 in tight on Steve Mason. He made the nice save. So you know, the Jets are hoping that he has a big game for them, or maybe they don't need him to have a big game because they control the play. But, you know, really, this is a statement game for the Jets. Or maybe even a statement two games, because we talk about not taking teams lightly. You know, again, the Jets, sure, they've had a run of recent success, but it's the NHL. It's not that far off to be able to, you know, you lose a few games in a row and suddenly your position of power becomes a position of weakness. And really, you have to start clawing your way back in it. So right now the Jets have built up some points, which are important. But again, you just can't afford to lose games against the Coyotes.
Yeah, certainly. The bottom-feeding Arizona Coyotes, bottom of the NHL, they're going to be without Nicklas Chalmerson. He was their big off-season acquisition on the blue line. He's out of the lineup, or at least the expectation is that he'll remain out of the lineup after he suffered an injury about 10 days ago or so. So you're looking at that Coyotes blue line, and, I mean, you know about Oliver Ekman-Larsson, and you know how good he is. Jason Demers is a solid defenseman. He's a solid veteran defenseman. Got to be honest, I don't know anything about Dakota Mermis, who, as far as I know, might be an alias for Michael Remus.
Yeah, he's a rookie.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's playing, you know, he's playing with Alex Goligoski for the most part. So there certainly are advantages that the Jets can take on the Coyotes and should take on the Coyotes. The question is, what Jets team comes in? Is it the Jets team we saw on Monday that looked really like a world beater against the Dallas Stars, who just swamped them in the first period, taking that 3-0 lead? Or is it the team that is... that looked sloppy, that looked lackadaisical, that looked just out of sync last night in Vegas, because they really don't have any time to get back into the flow of things, to find themselves. Puck drop is, you know, less than 12 hours from now.
Yeah, Drew, and the Jets have to get the clean 2 points tonight, because you can't go back to the MTS Center with just one win in regulation on this road trip, right? Mm-hmm. Sorry, I should say Bell MTS Place. You want to go back having at least picked up 2 wins out of 3 games. And, you know, you mentioned the defense, and, you know, Nicklas Chalmerson won't be playing tonight for the Coyotes. But, you know, Oliver Ekman-Larsson, we know he's a top 20, maybe even top 10 defenseman in the NHL. You mentioned Jason Demers, Alex Goligoski. They've got the rookie Dakota Mermis in the lineup right now. But it's Luke Shen is also on the Coyotes' back end. It's actually a pretty good veteran decor. It's not bad, but to me the problem is, this team just doesn't generate enough offense. We talked about Clayton Keller, the super rookie, great American forward. And, you know, that top line with Derek Stepan, Keller, and Max Domi, it's a good NHL first line. But then as you go down the lineup, this Coyotes team, it's a scrappy team to play against. But, you know, I've watched them a couple times this year, and they just don't generate enough offense. You know, you talk about the Jets and the fact that, you know, they would like to generate more shots. This Coyotes team, not only have they not been good defensively, which has been the surprise because you expected them to be better defensively, mm-hmm. especially with Chalmerson in the lineup, and then Antti Raanta, whether you want to say he's better than Mike Smith, I actually think Mike Smith is better than Antti Raanta personally.
I think Mike Smith probably time for a new change in Arizona. He'd been there for so many years.
But for me, it was more so, as you mentioned, bringing in Chalmerson, right? Yeah. You brought in a multiple-time Stanley Cup champion to kind of solidify that defense.
Definitely, he's a stay-at-home defender.
Sure, and he's not going to play tonight, but even when he was in the lineup, Drew, I mean, this team was having trouble keeping the puck out of their own zone.
Because they got substandard goaltending. I mean,
right.
Louis Domingue, I think we've seen enough from Louis Domingue from the Coyotes' perspective to know he's not an NHL goaltender. Antti Raanta, you know, this is his first opportunity to really be a starting goaltender in the league. He was always the backup in New York for so many years behind Lundqvist. This is his first opportunity to really take a job and run with it, and that's why they had to bring in, like you said, Scott Wedgwood from New Jersey, just to solidify the goaltending. It was, you know, it was like the Jets last year. They made a mistake with their goaltending, and when you don't have adequate goaltending, it doesn't matter how good your defense is to some extent. I mean, the goaltending is the key, and that's why the Coyotes, to this point right now, given up the most goals in the NHL, 70 goals against so far this year, which is, I mean, an incredible number through 15 games.
And that's why, Dave, you got to think that Connor Scheifele, Wheeler, I believe, was on the ice for 4 of the 5 goals. And again, you know, I don't want to put this all on Blake Wheeler because he's been the best Jet this season. But you know that those guys are going to be fired up. They weren't happy with the way they played in Vegas, and they're going to look at that Arizona Coyotes lineup, and they're going to hope that they can feast on it.
Yeah, and you know what? I listened to the post-game interviews with the players, and I actually expected them to be a little bit more snarly, and I think that they were understanding of how they played, and they weren't blaming it on anyone else, and they also acknowledged the fact that the Golden Knights were a good team, and they, you know, had that anticipation that, you know, that you have to play, you know, that's two NHL teams. You can't just say, okay, we're an NHL team, and this is a lesser one. We're just going to pick them off, and it's going to be easy. So, you know, they're obviously going to say the right things, but the fact is that this is an absolute, first of all, it's a game you have to take because, and again, I talked about it earlier, about emptying the tank and really taking your opportunity because, you know, after today, you're not really going to have a lot of time off in between games. You know, they have
every second game.
Every second game after today, right? So they play today, then they have a few days before the Arizona game, and then it's every second game.
Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday,
right.
Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday.
So really, this is your opportunity to empty the tank, recharge on Sunday, and then keep your focus going. And then again, like I said, you're going to get a boost in the arm, hopefully, for this team with Matthew Perreault's return, and then we'll really see a more balanced, structured, well, hopefully structured, but balanced scoring output because you can't rely on the top line because if the top line doesn't produce, you know, the second line just doesn't seem to have that chemistry, which obviously we're going to talk about, and you just can't rely on one line in the NHL.
Well, and Dave, don't be surprised if this game goes to a shootout. Three of the last four Coyotes games have gone to a shootout. The good news for the Jets is the Coyotes have lost 2 of those 3 games.
Well, that's just what they're looking to do. They're looking to muck it up, and the Coyotes know that they can't play a run and gun. Rick Tocchet is trying to instill in them his strategy and his style, which is obviously going to be, you know, take care of business in your own zone first from the Coyotes' perspective, because they just don't have the, besides that top line and besides Clayton Keller, they don't have the depth underneath that to get things going. Anthony Duclair has really dropped off since his great rookie year. He had a lousy year last year. And, you know, so, he, you know, he's, you know, they're, theoretically they were going to count on him for some secondary offense. It just hasn't come from him thus far, really, at all recently.
And you know what? The Coyotes, we knew that, you know, there wasn't going to be a lot of secondary scoring. You expected Clayton Keller to come in there and provide a lot of offense. Maybe you didn't expect him to score this many goals this early, but, you know, Max Domi's only picked up a goal. Derek Stepan has only had 2 goals so far this year in 18 games. So you expected more out of Derek Stepan as your top line center. But after those first couple of lines, Drew, there just isn't a lot of scoring throughout the lineup.
No, there certainly isn't. It'll be interesting. The Jets and the Coyotes, puck drop tonight, 9 o'clock, a game you can hear exclusively on TSN 1290. When we come back, we're going to talk to Terry Koshan of the Toronto Sun, see what's going on in the big smoke, and, you know, maybe even look around the NHL in general. Terry Koshan up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Bottom of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Bombers depth chart for tomorrow's Western semifinal has just been released. Matt Nichols, atop the Bombers depth chart, will be the starting quarterback after some questions about that earlier in the week. Matt Nichols will start for the Bombers tomorrow afternoon against the Edmonton Eskimos.
New father,
yes. Congratulations to him and his family on and his wife and their other, I believe they already have a daughter. They had a baby yesterday. So Matt Nichols going to look to make it 2 wins on the week tomorrow.
I guess I should say father again, just like you.
Yes.
Not
exactly.
New father.
Not new father, but
yeah.
You can, new father's okay.
New addition
too.
To their family.
There you go. So he's going to look for 2 wins on the week when they play tomorrow afternoon against the Edmonton Eskimos.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program Terry Koshan. Terry's with the Toronto Sun, covers the Toronto Maple Leafs. Terry, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, how you doing, guys?
Doing very well, Terry. How about yourself?
Good.
That's good. Obviously, you're a little bit healthier than Austin Matthews is. You know, how is the what's the apoplectic level in Toronto on this Saturday morning? He's going to miss his third consecutive game tonight when they play the back-to-back in Boston. You know, the military on the streets, people, you know, calm and cool about it, or is the panic level increasing?
Well, I think the military on the streets say for a completely different reason, of course, but you know what? They've won this week without him, two games in a row. They won with a not 100% Austin Matthews against Vegas on Monday night. So the level is not nearly as high as it would be had they lost a couple of these games, if not all three. So, you know, we believe it's a back issue with Matthews that he's working his way through. We know that if anyone's ever had a back problem before, that these things don't clear up overnight. But the fact of the matter is the Maple Leafs are winning without him. And, you know, nicely, guys, their schedule finally gives them a bit of a break after they play tonight. They don't play again until next Thursday at home against the Devils. So there's a nice break in there, and they get through tonight without him, which they will. You know, I would suspect he'd be back in the lineup next Thursday.
You know, Terry, as you mentioned, the Leafs have won the last two games without Austin Matthews. Patrick Marleau obviously scored the winning goal last night. I think he is now seventh all-time in game-winning goals with 101. Do you think he gets enough credit league-wide for how clutch of a goal scorer he is?
Well, you know what? It's funny. We just did this Western trip, actually before, but I was on the trip to the Leafs, and the Kings were in Toronto you know, a week or so before that trip, and Drew Doughty was just talking about how playing in California, they fly under the radar no matter the stature of the player. And I think that that's what we've seen with Patrick Marleau. Listen, people who know hockey, of course, and know the game and follow it closely know what he's done for the San Jose Sharks over the years, and there is a lot of respect for him there. But overall, no, to answer your question. And I think it's great to see a guy of his stature and what he's done for the game, in the game, very quietly. Now playing in a market like Toronto, where and on the East Coast, quite frankly, where some of these things will be noticed a little more, and it really is incredible. I mean, 515 career goals now, and like you say, 101 game winners, and it's I think he's headed for the Hall of Fame. I know that he hasn't won the Stanley Cup, but he's won some other things in his hockey career, i.e., Olympic gold, and I just think he has a place in the Hall of Fame when he's done.
Terry, you know, I'm going to stick with Patrick Marleau because I'm curious to know what kind of impact is he having on the younger players, teaching them how to be a pro and that sort of impact off the ice?
Well, it's a funny thing. I don't know about off the ice. I think you have four boys, and you guys were talking about fatherhood before I came on, and we all know what that's like. I mean, your attention goes to your family as soon as you leave work, or at least it should, and I think it does with him. But I know that when he is at the rink, the routines that he goes through to prepare himself for every game, that is, players have taken notice of that. You know, there was a great quote from Zach Hyman coming into the win against Minnesota on Wednesday where, you know, Marleau beat out an icing. And we don't see that a lot right now with the way the linesmen call it. Usually the tie, if you will, goes to the side that will then have the face-off from the far end. But Marleau beat out an icing. It was noted after the game, and Hyman said, you know, if a guy who has scored 500 career goals in NHL is beating out an icing, he's showing you what a pro should be doing every shift. And that quote got a lot of traction, and I think he's right, and that's what Marleau's done. And there's been the production, too. I mean, I think the Leafs are 6-0 now in games that he's scored, guys. So, I mean, it's a bit of a weird stat that maybe doesn't mean a heck of a lot in the long run, but the fact of the matter is that's what's happening. And it's just a very, if you will, a quiet impact through that room. There was a lot of noise made last year about what Matt Martins was doing to the kids off the ice, especially Matt Marner becoming best friends with them, that sort of thing, going on their all-star break trip together. I just think with Marleau, it's just such a professional, even keel, show up, do your job, do it properly, and that's trickled down to all these guys. Having said that, a guy like Austin Matthews, when he's in the lineup, doesn't necessarily require that, but I don't think it hurts.
Terry Koshan, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, discussing the Toronto Maple Leafs on this Saturday morning. Terry, the Leafs score a lot of goals, and they also give up a lot of goals. Freddie Anderson, an over three goals against average, 3.25, a .901 save percentage through 16 games. How do the Leafs get him right?
Well, it's interesting. It's a funny thing. He's actually turned the corner a bit here in the last little while. And It started on that California trip where they won what one of the three games. He was good against the Sharks, and he was good against not great but good against Anaheim as well. And you know, had a bit of a fall against St. Louis. He's going to get there. He got there last year, and perhaps it's just like last year. You know, he had the injury coming out of camp and missed a lot of camp and this sort of thing. It took him a while to get his bearings. I think that's happening now. I think that the fact that, you know, a good example was Wednesday against Minnesota. Without Frederick Anderson playing the way he did, I don't think they win that hockey game. That's all there is to it. These three wins, guys, this week, they've been outshot in all three. In a couple, it was fairly close, but the fact is that some of the more of the play has been in their end. And I just think that he is turning the corner. That save percentage doesn't look great in the long haul, but I think if you look back over the last half dozen games or so, it is much better than 901. So he's on the way, but they need him to be this guy. And I think this week has been important to win some of these tight games, two of them needing extra time, of course. But, you know, they were really down on themselves coming back off the California-St. Louis trip, and they managed to turn it around this week, and Anderson's been a big reason why.
Terry, we wanted to ask you about Morgan Riley, the former Moose Jaw Warrior. He picked up another assist last night. He's got 14 points in 18 games, and I did the calculation, and he's on pace for 63 points this year. Is Morgan Riley just taking that next step in his career? Have you noticed a difference between Morgan Riley this year and last year?
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt. He has been benefited to a great degree by playing with a veteran like Ron Hainsey. Guys, I was like a lot of people in the summer when the Leafs signed Hainsey. You weren't sure what kind of addition he would be. Yes, we had just seen him have a great playoff run with the Pittsburgh Penguins, played a lot of minutes on a team that was missing Chris Letang to win the Stanley Cup. But he's just been a real benefit for Morgan Riley. Riley's always had the confidence to do what he's able to do and just take the puck and go and make that great first pass. I mean, the guy can skate like the wind. You know, fans of the Warriors would have seen that in his junior career, especially even after the knee injury. But I just think playing with Hainsey, it's a rock for him, an anchor, a solid foundation, if you will. You know, the other part of it, too, is I don't want to take anything from Riley here. It's just a part of the maturation process for him. We all know that unless it's the case is really extreme, a lot of these kids coming out of junior and playing on the blue line in the National Hockey League, it takes 3, 4, 5, 6 years for them to really find their stride. And, you know, we kind of forget that what's Riley, 23 to 24 in March. He's still a young guy in this. But, you know, getting more power play time than he has before. Mike Babcock came in and said, we're going to teach you defensively that side of the game. You're going to penalty kill, to these sorts of things. We always know you're going to be back in the power play at some point. And I just think it's more of a case now where Riley is using all of his skill set to a better degree. And like I say, Hainsey's been, it's funny, a few of us said to Babcock in the past little while, is Hainsey a bit of an unsung hero here, the way that he's played with Riley? Babcock just shrugs and looks at us, and the Babcock answers, "Not to me, he isn't." So, it's a combination of like I say, of growth on Riley's part, and then having a veteran playing beside him every night.
Terry, Nikita Soshnikov is with the Marlies in the AHL right now, but he has the option to return to the KHL if he's not in the NHL by Tuesday. How do you see this playing out?
I don't know. I think I wouldn't be surprised if the Leafs do recall him and have him on the roster. They can make that roster move, if you will, with Fred Gauthier being with the club right now, and you know, we'll see. It's an interesting case. He played last year. He did some good things for them. They really liked his hustle. They liked his determination. Did it necessarily show up on the score sheet? No. I think in the minutes that he played, Mike Babcock and the coaching staff were satisfied with him. So we'll have to see. I mean, do I think he flees back? I don't even say flees back to Russia. He doesn't say that. I shouldn't put it that way. Do I think he goes back to Russia? I don't think so. Not necessarily. I still believe that he believes that there's a future for him in the organization, and they like him. And you know, this is one of the branches of depth, if you will. This is one of the things that happens when you do have the depth of forward that the Leafs do. I mean, the greatest example, of course, they're winning hockey games without Austin Matthews, but, you know, there's that trickle-down effect means that guys like Kasperi Kapanen, who should be in the NHL, Mike Babcock a week and a half ago called him an everyday player, a guy like Soshnikov should be as well. Does that lead to a frustration point for Soshnikov? I don't think so. I think he's going to be with the club at some point, probably sooner rather than later, of course, you know, by the Tuesday-Wednesday deadline. And then we'll see where it goes and see how much they use him. But, you know, the fact is, guys, we're not talking about either a guy who is necessarily going to be a top six for you at some point. I just don't see that in his future with the Leafs and the way the roster stands now.
Terry, I know Mitch Marner's goal scoring has been a hot topic there in Toronto. Right. In your opinion, is it because he's not shooting the puck enough, or is it maybe just a question of not getting that puck luck?
Well, I think he's got to get involved more. We're seeing it a bit. I mean, if it comes to a point where Mitch Marner is getting more confidence, guys, out of getting points in the power play, fine. If it comes from the goal, the beautiful shootout goal that he scored against Vegas on Monday night, fine. But he is getting his points. I think he's got, what, 5 assists in the past 4 games, if I'm not mistaken. And it's a concern to the point that it hasn't happened since, you know, the first game in Winnipeg that he has scored a goal. But they are winning hockey games again, so it's a bit more of a back burner issue. He is getting points, like I say. But the fact is, I think Marner just hasn't been as involved as he was last year as a rookie. And I don't mean, you know, getting his nose dirty and all that sort of thing. That's not really the way that he plays the game. He's not big enough to play that way on a regular basis. But it's just being a bit more of a perimeter player right now in the greater sense. And it's going to come for him. He's not getting a ton of shots. He says to us a lot, you know, I still have that pass-first mentality. It's just ingrained in him, the player that he's always been. But, you know, it's like I said, it's not a huge concern for them right now because they've won the past 3 games.
Terry, last question for you, and we always appreciate your time. Last year, Jake Gardiner and Nikita Zaitsev were a revelation as a pairing. This year, certainly many more struggles for that duo than we saw last season. Why the change? Why have they been struggling so far this year, and how do the Leafs get them out of it?
Well, you know what? I asked Gardiner point blank that exact question on Wednesday morning after the skate. So what has happened to you two? And he just said, I don't know. He said, it's tough. We can't figure it out ourselves. You know, maybe Zaitsev getting the time that he is on the PK right now, you know, he means you're the top PK pair. And maybe that's affecting him the rest of the way in 5-on-5. I don't know, but it's a funk. There's no doubt about it. You know, Hainsey and Riley have emerged as the top pair, if you will. I don't know necessarily that the ice time shows that, but, you know, these guys are the competition they're seeing, this sort of thing, the ice they are getting, they do have to be better. And it's a bit of a conundrum because Gardner's the type of guy who, you know, I know he's a bit of a lightning rod here because, you know, a glaring error or two might happen for a game and then people glom onto that, but he does do other things well. When he's playing well, he moves the puck really well. He's, again, you talk about Riley and skating. Well, Gardner's stride is unmatched by pretty much every Leaf. The guy can just go. So, no, it's a bit of a head-scratcher. We asked Babcock the other day, what's your take on Zaitsev right now? He said, nothing. I think he's doing great. So, you know, fact is, he is part of a penalty kill, too. I think he's 19th overall. So that's not going perfect for them by any stretch. But, again, it goes back to the Marner issue. If they're winning hockey games, I guess it's not as big an issue for them, but you know, it's one of those things where those two have to turn the corner. There's no doubt about that. You know, these guys want to be a serious playoff team and all that. And Zaitsev and Gardner have to pick it up.
Winning covers a lot of warts, Terry, and it certainly looks that way in Toronto. Terry Koshan is with the Toronto Sun. Terry, always appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me, guys. Take care.
Our pleasure, Terry. You too. Take care.
Thanks a lot, Terry.
When we come back, we discuss the 5-on-5 struggles of the little Line A Ehlers line. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Back down the right side, Line A. Working it into the slot. Puck up this way. The season and the Jets take the lead.
That was Brian Little's only of the season. That came back on October 14th, almost a month ago, against the Carolina Hurricanes, that Saturday night game that the Jets won. It was not a beauty of a game, but that was the only goal so far this year for Brian Little. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290, and this segment is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Gentlemen, how many points in even strength do you think that Brian Little, Patrick Laine, and Nikolaj Ehlers have combined in the last 10 games?
Four.
Yeah, you know that because I told you the answer already. But isn't that amazing? I don't think that we're talking about that enough, that a line that features Brian Little, Nikolai Ehlers, and Patrick Laine have been that poor at 5-on-5, and maybe that's emblematic of the Jets entirely at 5-on-5, that they only have 4 points combined in the last 10 games.
Yeah, and there's no doubt that Patrick Laine is doing all of his damage, most of his damage, on the power play. And,
sure.
You know, we talked about it during the first segment. Last night, the Brian Little, Nikolai Ehlers, Patrick Laine line was, in my opinion, the best line. And the possession numbers will bear that out. Their possession numbers were much better than the Connor Scheifele Wheeler line. And there's no doubt, though, Drew, that this line is struggling at 5-on-5.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you just mentioned it, the 4 points in 10 games at 5-on-5. But when you're talking about, you know, the amount of shots they're generating, I think that, to me, is the biggest concern. And Nikolai Ehlers has had a fantastic start to the season. And, you know, Patrick Laine has struggled at times in his own zone. And we saw, you know, on the William Karlsson shorthanded goal, Patrick Laine and Dustin Byfuglien had a bit of a miscommunication and Karlsson got away on the breakaway. But we're talking about more so offensively. And as you mentioned, Brian Little is a 5-time 20-goal scorer.
Mm-hmm.
And he was nearly a point-per-game player last year for the Jets, even though he missed the first 20 games. And, you know, I think, you know, when I watch this team play, when I watch this line play, I should say, you know, at times they look out of sorts. And I think it's because, you know, we know that Patrick Laine is a shoot-first type of player. He's also got fantastic playmaking ability, but we know that he wants to shoot when he has the puck.
He's got the best shot in the NHL.
Right, and the problem with that is, you know, Nikolai Ehlers is also a guy that likes to shoot the puck, even though he's the setup guy. I mean, Nikolai Ehlers is the setup guy on that line, and you have no shortage of playmakers on this line. But right now, I think, you know, Nikolai Ehlers is a very fast player,
mm-hmm.
and I wouldn't say that, you know, Patrick Laine is the fastest player. Brian Little, you know, he can skate. So, you know, sometimes you watch this line, and I think it's not so much a problem with zone entries or any of that. I think it's more so sustained pressure. Because, Dave, this line, they like to score off of the rush. And we know that Nikolai Ehlers will, you know, bring the puck into the offensive zone and he'll loop around behind the net and he can find either Laine or Little, wherever they might be on the ice. But to me, at times, I think they have trouble sustaining pressure. Like, this isn't a cycle line. This isn't a line that's going to spend
a
lot of time.
They're not going to grind you down low.
Exactly. It's a line that, you know, they want to score off of the rush or on set plays.
Mm-hmm.
We know Patrick Laine likes to set himself up, you know, at the top of the circles or in the slot, you know, and hope that Brian Little or Nikolai Ehlers can get him the puck. But to me, that's kind of what it's been. It's been a little bit of a, I think, a contrast in speed. And I think at times, you know, the line has looked out of sorts. But even though it's only 15 games into the year, I should say it has only been 15 games into the year, I think they will start to score at a better rate, though.
Dave, your thoughts on the line? I mean, can they continue to just keep going with this line, given their poor performance at 5-on-5? Would you consider doing something with the top line, even though they've been so good as of late? I mean, how do you get this trio going 5-on-5?
It's a good question. I mean, do you do something radical, flip, you know, Little on with, you know, someone who has had chemistry, you know, demonstrated chemistry with Wheeler? Can you afford to break up Scheifele and Wheeler because of how well they're playing? But can you have all your scoring on one line right now? And it's pretty obvious that there just seems to be something that's off. But again, hockey's a funny game. You know, we talked about it during the break. You know, if Brian Little scores on what essentially is an empty net last night, except, you know, the defenseman Schmidt gets his stick there, maybe the good feelings start and he's not holding his stick so tight and that line starts to turn it around. He doesn't, and so he's kind of left looking up at the scoreboard wondering what is going on, what's wrong with him. And you know, there was a lot of talk earlier in the week about Brian Little and off to being a bit of a slower start than he's used to seeing, and perhaps that's part of it. And, you know, as he was talking about the speed of that line and how, you know, we've got a guy like Ehlers who's a shoot first, and, you know, Ehlers has 8 goals, Laine has 8 goals, and Little is just kind of, you know, and that's fine because Brian Little is more of an opportunistic shooter. He doesn't shoot. He doesn't have a high doesn't take a tendency to shoot a lot. His volume is usually pretty low, but his shooting percentage is usually pretty good. So Brian Little is an opportunistic shooter, which is fine because realistically he facilitates those two guys who are big shooters getting them the puck. But I don't know what it is. It just doesn't seem to be working right now. And so if you're Coach Maurice, again, it's not necessarily time to blow everything up because you're still having success. And now a lot of that, of course, we talked about is through Connor Hellebuyck. But it gives you, affords you the opportunity to kind of be a little bit more patient and allow the line to kind of find things out.
Well, and Dave, there's only one puck on the ice, right? And we know that Ehlers likes to have the puck on his stick. And he should want to have the puck on the stick. He's one of the fastest players in the league. He's one of the best stick handlers in the league.
Mm-hmm.
But Laine also wants to have the puck on his stick. And I don't think at times sometimes Brian Little has been a passenger on this line. And I don't mean that in a negative way. Well, I think it's just because of how skilled Ehlers and Laine are.
Yeah.
And Little really isn't getting the opportunity, I think, to show what he's got.
If you had to say which of those three is the not least skilled, but I mean, you know, Laine and Ehlers, I think Brian Little himself would probably admit that Laine and Ehlers have more natural skill than Brian Little does.
True, but I mean, at the same time, Brian Little's the guy who defensively is going to keep that line in check.
He's a very good hockey player. I'm not trying to criticize Brian Little, and you know, I'm not damning him with faint praise by saying he's the passenger, as he said on
that
line.
And what I mean by that, I'll take that further again, because if you've listened to the show over the last 7 years, and Dave and I have talked about this many times, I think Brian Little is a very underrated center.
What am I, chopped liver?
Well, no, I'm just saying Dave and I specifically, and no, you're definitely not chopped liver. I'd say you're more so like tuna salad.
Thank you.
But when you're talking about Little right now, we know that Ehlers likes to look for Laine.
Yeah.
Right? And Ehlers has this puck on his stick a lot, and he generates a lot of shots. And I think at times, Little's the one that wants to get Laine the puck. Right? So I think at times, and again, it's kind of the style that they play. I mean, this isn't a grind-you-down-low style they play, as we talked about. It's the type of, it's a skilled line, and they don't dump the puck in that much. I mean, Ehlers is a guy that likes to take the puck over the blue line and, you know, make plays and get it to Laine or Little, but I mean, right now, I just think at 5-on-5, as Dave mentioned, they just don't seem to be as cohesive as you'd like. And, you know, we know that Brian Little and Blake Wheeler have played a lot over the last 6 years. So I don't know that they changed this line. But one thing is certain, guys, after 15 games, I mean, this line definitely leaves more to be desired.
Yeah, and that's, I think, the problem that the Jets are having, you know. The top line has been so good that you sort of hesitate to mess with chemistry. And the team is winning. Or prior to last night, the team was winning or getting points, and that covers up all the warts and all the problems, so that, you know, you don't really notice the struggles of the second line in 5-on-5 situations, because at the end of the game, you have your 2 points, and you're happy, and you move on to the next game. The problems, I mean, it'll come to fruition really quickly if the team struggles tonight in Arizona, or if they're beginning to be less successful than they had been for the past, you know, 10 games or so. Then all of a sudden, the questions do come up. As we posed right now, how do you get the second line going? Because they're not doing it on their own right now.
Right, and I wouldn't be surprised if Brian Little scores a goal tonight. I wouldn't be surprised if he scored again Tuesday night against Arizona, because that line played so well last night in Vegas. So I'm not at all concerned about it. I'm just, you know, giving you my
observations. So you saw enough out of them last night that you're optimistic that they will, that their chemistry is beginning to gel?
Well, there's no doubt they have chemistry. I just don't think that they've put it together in long enough stretches.
When we come back, we talk more about the Arizona Coyotes. Luke Lipinski is the Coyotes radio host. He joins us next to talk about the Jets' opponent tonight. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Hour number two up next on TSN 1290. Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome to the program Luke Lipinski. Luke is the Arizona Coyotes radio host. He joins us to talk about the Jets and the Coyotes tonight, 9 p.m., a game you can hear live on TSN 1290. Luke, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Luke.
Luke, can we call you Cool Hand Luke?
You can do that. I will allow it.
Well, there you go. You already have your nickname for the show. That didn't take long at all. Luke, obviously, as I mentioned, talk about the Arizona Coyotes. Coyotes certainly struggling to start the year with the 2-13-3 record. But are you seeing signs that they're beginning to at least play better hockey? The results may not necessarily be there yet, but are you at least seeing signs that they're no longer just a train wreck like they were earlier in the year?
Yeah, they look a lot different now than they did, you know, the first couple weeks of the season. And, you know, it was even tough to evaluate them then, because they were playing a lot of one-goal games, and then they would give up an empty net goal late. And so you could look at that and you could say, well, they're close to all these teams. But, you know, the reality was they didn't know how to finish games yet. And don't get me wrong, I mean, they still only have the two wins. But, there was a lot of shuffling. They didn't have Jacob Chychrun. They still don't. They didn't have Antti Raanta, which is a big deal because he was supposed to be your number one goalie, and now he's settled in and he's been that guy. But, you know, more than anything, these guys that were here last year and the last couple of years finally now seem to be fitting into the system that Rick Tocchet has been teaching, and it makes sense. You know, it would take a couple of weeks to get into that, and you are definitely seeing a difference now. They've points in four of their last seven. They were right there with St. Louis the other night. That was a very winnable game, and it was at the end of a 3-game-and-4-night road trip against the Penguins, Capitals, and Blues. That's not something they could have done a couple weeks ago.
Well, Luke, it's only 18 games into the season, but when you're talking about Clayton Keller, is he all alone right now in the Calder Trophy race?
Well, I mean, if he keeps playing like this, I don't know how anybody's going to catch him. It's a pretty compelling rookie race this year with guys like Brock Besser and all those guys in New Jersey, certainly. But, you know, Keller, there's been high expectations for him here since day one, ever since John Chyka took him with the seventh pick in that 2016 draft. And he's exceeded them. I mean, he basically is good for a point seemingly every night. And, you know, the Coyotes, they're a young team. They're still sort of acclimating all these new guys to the roster. So they really have had one consistent line this season. So the opposition can focus on Clayton Keller's line, and he's still been producing.
Luke, Oliver Ekman-Larsson is in his eighth NHL season, but recently trade rumors cropped up, which Coyotes GM John Chyka quickly dismissed. But can you see a scenario whereby he isn't wearing an Arizona uniform by the end of this year?
I would be really shocked. I mean, he means so much to what they're trying to do. Some team would have to come in with just a ridiculous offer where that team greatly overpaid. And then even, you know, even at that point, he's been such a big part of this organization, and, you know, he's so well-liked in that room. And you guys see it around the league. I mean, there's not a lot of potentially elite defensemen around the league. And he's still, you know, he's not young on a team relatively with a bunch of 19 and 20-year-olds, but he's still pretty young in this league. And you know, if the Coyotes are really, if they're building big picture long-term, they need him as the anchor on their blue line. So I'd be really surprised.
Luke Lipinski is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing the Arizona Coyotes, the Jets and the Coyotes in Glendale, Arizona, tonight, 9 o'clock puck drop. Luke, Anthony Duclair was the return for the Coyotes in the Keith Yandle trade a couple years ago. He came over to Arizona. He had that great year in 2015-16. You thought the sky was the limit for the kid. Last year, certainly not a great year, and this year, sort of a meandering start to the season. What do you see from Anthony Duclair, and why hasn't he been able to replicate the success that he had in that first year in Arizona?
He's a tough one to figure out because you can see the offensive skill and he's got the speed. That first year, I will say, I mean, his shooting percentage was through the roof, and he was playing with Max Domi a lot, and those two, I mean, those guys had success back on Team Canada and the World Juniors and everything, so there was some good chemistry there. Last year, they got split up a little bit, and then, you know, Duclair just, he didn't have the shooting touch last year. He's looked better this year. He's still been a healthy scratch a couple nights because they are trying to get him to sort of be, you know, just a more complete, grittier player along the wall. And that's never going to be his forte, but they just need a little bit more of it from him. But the scoring and the offensive prowess has at least been there more this year than last year. He just hasn't found a rhythm yet.
Luke, Nicholas Hjalmarsson was obviously a big free agent acquisition, pardon me, a trade acquisition by the Arizona Coyotes, along with some other players, Derek Stepan, Antti Raanta. He's out of the lineup right now. He's been out of the lineup for a couple weeks. How close is he to returning to the lineup? And when he was healthy, how would you assess his first 12 games of the year?
They've been fairly unclear on in terms of how close he is to returning. That one's still sort of up in the air. He was stabilizing veteran presence that they needed. And again, that was early in the season when a lot of the forwards would be out of position or some of the other defensemen would be out of position on plays where you could tell, like, you know, some of them seemed to still be playing Dave Tippett's old system and some of them were already figuring out Tocchet's system. So there was a lot of players scattered around the ice for the most part when Hjalmarsson was still playing. But, you know, he gives you 25 minutes of pretty solid hockey every night. And that's something they need right now because, again, as I said, they don't have Jacob Chychrun. Right now, they don't have Alex Goligoski, and he hasn't been ruled out for tonight. But, I mean, that right there is half your defense. And Hjalmarsson is, you know, he's got the Stanley Cup experience. He's supposed to be that stabilizing force, and he was in those first few weeks. We just didn't see it translate to wins yet.
Luke, Max Domi is in his third NHL season, but he only has one goal so far, along with 9 assists in the 18 games for the Coyotes. Why so few goals? Is he still getting chances?
he is getting chances. There was a stretch there of about three or four games where you could just see that, like, I don't want to say it was in his head, but there were shots that he would typically make that were either ringing off a post or a crossbar or a goalie would make a great save. And then there was like a game where he would get a shot and he would kind of fan on the puck or the puck wouldn't sit for him on a breakaway. So I think more than anything, this is just a bit of a prolonged scoring slump. He's still getting the assists. For the most part, he's been on that top line with Derek Stepan and Clayton Keller. So he is getting chances too.
Luke Lipinski is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing the Arizona Coyotes ahead of the Jets and Coyotes tonight in Glendale, Arizona. Luke, you know, pardon me, sorry there. I was going to ask you about Derek Stepan and his role in the Coyotes since coming over in the trade from the Rangers. How's he looked sort of being that number one center for the Coyotes?
Yeah, he's been great for him. You know, I know that if you look around the league, there are certainly more pure franchise number one centers, and I think ideally they would, you know, they'd love to have, who wouldn't, you know, somebody on that level to step in and have Derek Stepan as a really good number two. But he's been fine as the number one. You know, he made a great play in overtime the other night. The Coyotes 3-on-3 against St. Louis, they had their guys out there for well over a minute, and they were just, St. Louis is applying all the pressure, and Stepan makes this play to just sort of break the play up, regain possession for the Coyotes, and then he spins and sets up Oliver Ekman-Larsson for a breakaway that didn't get converted. But it's just, he makes the steady plays, and then off the ice, he's tremendous as a leader. And again, it's not like he's in his late 30s, you know, he's still in his late 20s now, but he is that sort of veteran presence, much like Hjalmarsson on defense, that they really need. And he's just very vocal. He's somebody that you can tell the guys like to be around, and he's really embraced this situation.
Now, Luke, you mentioned earlier the Coyotes are not getting the results that they wanted, but do you think that Coyotes head coach Rick Tocchet is getting his message across about how he wants this team to play?
Yeah, I think he is. And, you know, you have to look at where Rick Tocchet came from. He won Stanley Cups the last 2 years, so he kind of went from the extreme of a team that's built around Sidney Crosby and they know how to win and they're just doing it every year to a team. There's a lot of new players. I mean, you've got some rookies, but then you've got a ton of guys that are only in their second year, and it feels like the rest of the team, if they're not in their first or second year, they're in their third year. So he's been extremely patient. The one thing that I would say has been most impressive about this team so far, and I don't know if this comes from him or guys like Stepan and Oliver Ekman-Larsson in the locker room, or if it's just the way these guys are built, but they really have maintained a legitimately positive attitude and a really strong work ethic coming to the arena and you know, even on practice days, playing really energized hockey. And again, I don't know if that's all from Rick Tocchet, but he's certainly a big part of it in the sense that, you know, start the season with 11 losses, you can look right through and you can find games against New Jersey and the Islanders and even Anaheim. They probably should have won, but they didn't. And so when you're starting the season with 11 losses, it's really easy to sort of mentally check out either on the coach or on your teammates, and they haven't done that. They've actually done the opposite.
Luke, considering the shared history between the two organizations, what does it mean for the Coyotes organization to be at the Dale Hawerchuk Hockey or the Hall of Fame induction for the Jets organization on Tuesday?
I mean, it's huge. I mean, you look at the career Dale Hawerchuk had. You know, it's remarkable. And sometimes those numbers get lost in the shuffle when you look back into the 80s and the 90s, because obviously the scoring was different. It was just a different game. But I mean, what he meant to just the franchise in general, and really what he meant to hockey, I mean, it can't be overstated.
John, we'll let you go. Pardon me. Luke, we'll let you go with this last question about John Chyka. You know, obviously still the youngest general manager in the NHL. How have you seen him change maybe or grow into the role since he was named general manager just a couple years ago?
I think in general, you know, he's probably just building more connections around the league and you know, it seems like he's just more comfortable in the role. I mean, he stepped right in, and in his first draft where he was the guy, he ended up getting Clayton Keller and Jacob Chychrun in the first round. So he was doing pretty good from the very beginning. I mean, that was the year where he was, you know, he basically traded cap space to move up and get Chychrun, and he did the same essentially to get Lawson Crouse. And, you know, he pulled off those trades on draft day this year to get Stepan and Ranta and Nicholas Hjalmarsson, essentially for pieces the Coyotes really weren't using other than that seventh overall pick in the first round. But you know, they've had so many first-round picks, and they had another one this year anyway, that he's done a really good job of going out and taking either small risks or no risk at all without really giving anything up. And so he's, most of his trades and his moves have, you can see the return for the Coyotes already, and he really hasn't put a lot on the table in terms of what he's giving up. So far, so good with him. And I know it's still a very limited sample size, but that does sort of get lost in the shuffle of how their record looks right now.
Luke Lipinski is the Arizona Coyotes radio host. The Jets and the Coyotes will do battle later on tonight. Luke, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Take care, Luke. When we come back, we pay tribute to Mr. Dale Hawerchuk, being inducted into the Jets Hall of Fame on Tuesday. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Certainly a fitting intro with the Jets set to retire Dale Hawerchuk. Well, I guess they're not retiring his number, but they're honoring Dale Hawerchuk on Tuesday as he enters the Jets Hall of Fame ahead of the Jets-Coyotes game at Bell MTS Place. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by our friends at Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team, or have a jersey you want personalized, maybe a vintage Dale Hawerchuk jersey, for example, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com. You can check out their showroom, 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherbourne. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. As I mentioned, the Jets, Dale Hawerchuk, he's going to be inducted into the Jets Hall of Fame on Tuesday. Producer Rory put together a brief little retrospective of Mr. Dale Hawerchuk as a member of the Jets 1.0.
Taken first overall in 1981, the future Hall of Famer paid immediate dividends as the Jets made a 48-point improvement on the previous year.
Yeah, it's funny. Ducky came out when I got it in junior. There was a player there that thought I skated like a duck a little bit. Of course, Scott O'Neill, who was a good friend and teammate for many years here, he brought the name to Winnipeg. And once one of the reporters heard the players calling me Ducky, then it was never Hawerchuk in the papers anymore. It was always Ducky, so it just kind of stuck.
Hawerchuk led the team in scoring for 9 straight seasons and became the Jets' first 50-goal scorer.
You know, obviously scoring 50 at home was great, and the way it happened, you know, a shorthanded goal and the way the play happened and the way the goalie came out, I don't know. Those are moves you don't think about beforehand, I can tell you that. The ovation from the crowd, you know, something you really appreciate.
Hawerchuk, he's going to get there first. Hawerchuk moving right in.
Whiteout was, I think it really surprised the players the very first time because it was so loud, it was so bright in the arena that when we came out, we started the game, it was like, wow, this is like a whole new building, are we in the Winnipeg Arena? I mean, it just took, it took the players by storm and seemed to take the league by storm, and it was a good asset for the club. You know, when Dave Ellett scored in overtime, you know, to beat the Oilers and go up 3-1 in the series, that was huge.
Ellett lets it go, score!
Well, John Garrett, you and I have both been in games at Chicago Stadium, considered to be the noisiest building in the league. I think tonight this Winnipeg Arena would rival anything we've ever heard in Chicago.
The ovation when Ellett put that puck in was deafening, and you see the fans are still standing here for the Winnipeg Jets.
They're all great moments, you know. I think as a Jet, you know, I think the guys really had a pride in their games. And you know what? You have to have that because it's a small community, it's a small city. You want to walk around the city and people recognize you everywhere. You want to be proud of your effort at least.
Even after a blockbuster trade to the Buffalo Sabres, Hawerchuk would always be remembered as a Jet.
I played for 4 NHL teams, but Winnipeg and the Jets have a special place in my heart.
Kudos to producer Rory putting that together, that video package, or that audio package as the case may be, ahead of Tuesday night's Jets induction of Dale Hawerchuk into their Jets Wall of Fame, Hall of Fame scenario. We'll be tremendously emotional, and nice that there's none of the controversy surrounding this induction like there was last year with Bobby Hall and the hotline and everything like that. So this can be certainly the focus on the ice with Dale Hawerchuk Tuesday night at Bell MTS Place. Your memories of Dale Hawerchuk, I mean, we know how influential he was. We know that he was, I mean, I think still is, not appreciated hockey-wide for just how talented and how good of a player he was. We know it here in Winnipeg, but small market, blah, 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 not Toronto, etc. sort of always a little under the radar for just how important he was to hockey in Winnipeg.
Yeah, very well said, Drew. And, you know, it's been quite some time since he was elected to the Hockey Hall of Fame back in 2001. And, you know, I think everyone would agree that if Dale Hawerchuk played another era, I think he'd get a lot more accolades. He obviously played in an era with a guy named Wayne Gretzky and a guy named Mario Lemieux. But, I mean, forget the fact that he had, you know, the multiple 100-point seasons and, you know, all the 50-goal seasons and all of that. When I think of Dale Hawerchuk and his greatest moment, to me, it has to be the 1991 Canada Cup. And he actually doesn't get credit for an assist.
87 Canada Cup?
Pardon me, 1987 okay. Canada Cup.
I was like, that's a weird Canada Cup.
He did play 91.
I know he did in 91.
1987 Canada sure. Cup is what I meant to say, Drew. And he doesn't get credit for that assist. But he's on the ice when Wayne Gretzky makes that pass to Mario Lemieux, scores the winning goal. And we all know that, you know, Dale Hawerchuk jumps up into Mario's arms and mm-hmm. Gretzky's arms there. And for me, that was really, you know, the pinnacle of his career as far as what he accomplished. He obviously never gets a Stanley Cup. The Jets never got out of the second round when he was a member of the Jets. But, you know, I mean, what else can you say about Hawerchuk? For me, not only is he a top player of all time, he's probably a top 20 player of all time.
Well, except if you're the NHL, as he was, of course, tremendously omitted from being one of the top 100 players of all time in that ceremony that was announced last year by the NHL. And that's, I think, just emblematic of his career. Remember, he wasn't a first ballot Hall of Famer, despite having all the staff that said he should have been. It took him that second time to get into the Hockey Hall of Fame because of a tremendous oversight. He's not in the top 100 players of all time. Again, a tremendous oversight. And that's just sort of, you know, sort of why he almost fits with Winnipeg so much, is because Winnipeg is almost a bit of an oversight to a lot of people. They don't necessarily think, I mean, obviously not me and not us because we love Winnipeg and we live here, but it's not front and center in people's minds. And that's maybe Dale Hawerchuk in a nutshell and why he fits so well with the city of Winnipeg for so long.
I also think he embraced living here. I mean, and that's the key. It wasn't a function of just being in Winnipeg and earning a paycheck and then going back home and going somewhere else and living your life elsewhere when it wasn't during the hockey season. I mean, he created a community with those early 80s Jets that was really the foundation for the team for the next 10 years. And so he wasn't simply impactful on the ice. He really had that role of kind of taking ownership. And, you know, he always talks about his place up in Gimli, which I think was Pelican Point before Pelican Point became something. And he was like one of the first people up there. And the truth is that he really embraced all the things that there were in Winnipeg. And, you know, he still comes back here regularly. And he obviously has influence with the Mark Scheifele pick. But the fact is, I would also go back to the 87 Canada Cup. I mean, I had a tremendous number of memories of him with the Winnipeg Jets organization and all the goals and how important he was for the Jets on a game-in, game-out basis. But that 87 Canada Cup, you know, face-off, pins, you know, pulls the guy back and allows Mario and I believe Larry Murphy and Wayne Gretzky to kind of get up the ice and set up that goal. So, I mean, you know, that to me is one of the most endearing Dale Hawerchuk memories because it kind of underlines what he was, right? Like, he was the guy who always was kind of following behind Lemieux and Gretzky in their shadows, but really was so impactful and made such a big, cast his own big shadow of the way he played on the ice and what he was able to do.
And Dave, people forget, you know, obviously after he gets traded to the Buffalo Sabres in return for Phil Housley, I mean, he was putting up, you know, I'm looking at his point totals right now, 98 points for the Sabres in his second year, 96 points in his third year, 86 points in his second last year, and then he went to St. Louis and 41 points in 66 games for the St. Louis Blues, and obviously, you know, finishes his career with the Flyers, and, you know, his point totals start to go down a little bit, even though he had 34 points in 51 games his last year in the league. But again, you know, Dave mentioned, you know, he played in an era with Mario Lemieux and Wayne Gretzky, but in the mid-80s, when Lemieux came into the league and the Oilers were winning their Stanley Cups, beginning to win their Stanley Cups, he was the third best player in the league, right? And that's saying a lot in the high-flying 80s, right?
Mm-hmm.
So 7 40-goal seasons, 5 100-point seasons, pardon me, 6 100-point seasons, and, you know, just an incredible career. What else can you say? I mean, he's one of the best players of all time, and to Dave's point, you know, about living in the community and having the cottage up in Gimli, I mean, when you think of the Winnipeg Jets 1.0, that's who you think about.
Oh, absolutely, without a doubt. There's sort of two eras to the Winnipeg Jets 1.0. There's the Housley era, pardon me, the Hawerchuk era, And then there's the Timu era, which of course was a much shorter period of time. But those are the two defining players of the Winnipeg Jets 1.0. And I mean, I think Dale Hawerchuk will be honored this year. I'd be shocked if it's anybody other than Timu Solani being honored next year into the
And
Jets.
If it isn't next year, you know it's going to be in the next couple years.
Absolutely. I mean, it's certainly, it's only a matter of time. So yep. These are the defining players of the Jets 1.0.
But it's this, it's, you know, sorry to interrupt you, Drew, but it's, I think the skill, I mean, we were younger, you know, when Dale Hawerchuk was having his dominant year. I mean, I was, you know, 5, 6, 7 years old, but I remember still even watching him play. But people forget how skilled he was with the puck, right? Yeah. He, I mean, just look at his point totals. And I realize that in those days, you know, you had 7 or 8 goals per game. But this is a guy that, you know, had an impact all over the ice. And he was a guy who scored almost every night. And, you know, he was that skilled that he was put in the same, you know, category as the top skilled players like Gretzky and Lemieux.
Well, the fact that he won, I mean, you talk about the 87 Canada Cup, one, the fact that he made that team, because that was probably the best, you know, I mean, certainly in the late 80s and early 90s, the best collection of hockey players at one time was that 87 Canada Cup. I mean, the fact he made that team is one. Two, the fact that he was top, you know, that Mike Keenan tapped him on the shoulder to go take that defensive zone draw at the end of the game or with the game on the line. In that, you know, that eventually led to the winning goal. You know, that tells you how much trust the team had in him, how much the coaching staff had in him, and how much the players themselves. I mean, the players know who's for real, and the players know who's a fraud. And the fact that he was on the team, the fact he was out there with him, the fact that they considered him a peer, these are Lemieux and Gretzky and Hawerchuk were, you know, they were peers. They weren't just, you know, he wasn't like a tag along. He wasn't a passenger. He was a peer to the people who you think of as the best players that have ever played in the game of hockey. You always have to say from a Jets perspective, a strictly Jets perspective, what if Jamie McCowan doesn't break his ribs? I mean, that's the one that, you know, you always go back to is what happens if he doesn't get injured in that playoff series with the Flames when the Jets were probably, I mean, they were probably one of the top 2 or 3 teams in the league. But again, the Oilers were always there as the juggernaut, and he could just never get over that mountain that was the Edmonton Oilers. But it was, I mean, you know, tremendous hockey. And, I mean, you think about back to that hockey, and I know everything historic always seems better, and, you know, but you think back to that hockey versus the hockey that we watch, well, last night's game, or the hockey that we watch more often than not nowadays, and they're almost two separate games altogether, just skill-wise and entertainment-wise. And that's, I think, a bit of a shame for the NHL in general, is that the game was so much more entertaining. Certainly skilled now, but way more entertaining on a nightly basis back in the 80s and early 90s.
Yeah, and that's why it's hard to say that the 1987 Canada Cup wasn't the best collection of players we've ever seen, and it's not just from Team Canada, right? When you're talking about Russia, you're talking about Alexander Mogilny, you're talking about Igor Larionov, right? You're talking about Fedosov.
Mm-hmm.
If you've watched that Central Red Army hockey documentary, I mean, it was a special time of skilled players, and Dale Hawerchuk was right up there.
Oh, certainly was, and it'll be a great night on Tuesday at Bell MTS Place as his name goes up into the rafters of the arena, and he gets honored and acknowledged and cheered by the crowd that'll be on hand to watch the Jets-Coyotes game. So it's going to be a tremendous honor for Dale Hawerchuk and, you know, our short little tribute to the man we all know as Ducky and who was sort of the face of the Winnipeg Jets 1.0 in the NHL era. When we come back, we shift our focus to the Washington Capitals. Ben Raby is going to join us. He's their radio host. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.